Welcome to Dancin' Moon Songcast. I'm Scott Simpson, casting from Dancin' Moon Studio in Spearfish Canyon on the north end of the Black Hills of South Dakota, right on the banks of the Spearfish Creek. If you'd like to follow along, you can download a free PDF of my lyric book from scottsimpsonmusic.com/lyrics. And of course, you can find links to all my music there as well. So let's get casting and find out what song we're going to talk about this time. Welcome to episode number two, I believe, of our poetry series. We're in the midst of a 10-week poetry series. Normally, if you listen regularly to Dancin' Moon Songcast, you know that we talk mostly about songwriting and songs and music composition, things like that. But we're taking a little break from the songs, and we're listening to maybe a different kind of song, poetry. And this is week number two, and we've got two poems that we're going to take a look at today. And as I mentioned in the previous episode, my intent is not to explain or summarize these poems. Poetry, as we talked about before, tends to be poetry because it's trying to say something, trying to express something, trying to get at something that is not easily gotten at in regular everyday prose. And so therefore, there's an element of a poem, of any poem, that goes beyond explanation, that goes beyond description in regular language. But I will talk a little bit. We're going to read two poems today. And after each one, we'll talk a little bit about some of the context for that and some connections that maybe are there to be made. But of course, the bigger part of a poem, of hearing a poem, of reading a poem, is asking yourself, what is this? What are these words, these sounds, these rhythms, these images? What do they do to me? This machine of words, what is it producing within me as I take it in? So that's what I would challenge you to do. So this first poem, I've chosen two poems, and kind of generally I chose them. They seem to go together in my mind because both of them take a look at something in nature and sort of meditate on what that has to say about my nature, about identity, who I am, and whether or not maybe that's a fixed thing, or maybe it is an element that has to do with relationship. Maybe I am who I am by virtue of relationship to everything else, as opposed to being a singular identity. We'll talk a little bit more about some of that, and hopefully maybe you'll do some thinking about identity or about being, and maybe what I would hope would be to encourage you to look around you and see what is going on in the world around you that may hold at least an opportunity to give some thought or some meditation to these things. I think we don't do enough reflective work. We like to kind of just let things go and just imagine that everything's going the way it's supposed to go, and then we can become victims of everything that's happening, rather than participants, rather than aware beings who are playing a role and playing a part in a grander thing that's happening within us and around us. So this first poem is called Vocation, And I'll just say one thing about that word. Vocation, we generally see that as a synonym to your job, your profession, what you do. Vocation has a slightly different connotation with it. VOC, that root has to do with voice. So vocation really has the implication of a calling. So it's a little more above my job or even my profession. It's like, for some reason, this is something that I feel called in some way to be a part of that. It's quite often used, of course, in ministry or things like that. But vocation is the title of this poem. Vocation. The voice that speaks us into engagement names, and in so many words, creates us, creates, not constructs, names, not labels. On the edge of an ocean, I break again and again if I am alive. What forms is not me, but rather the one who pronounces me, lifts me up and curls me over upon myself, translucent with living coral and darting flecks of hunger, and tosses me down, digging out eternally the earth, my cradle. The secret of living is not finally taking shape, but rather being ever rearticulated by this great benevolent tongue, so that continents are moved, tide pools populated, living creatures sent scuttling as one shattered form draws up once again into another, reformed, reborn, recreated, renamed. One song, measures cresting far out toward the horizon, sounding me into being, humming gently, even now, in these shallows. So, this is a song, I should say this is a poem and a song about sound, about voice, about shape. The metaphor, the primary metaphor in this is, of course, the ocean and that sound of waves crashing and the idea that each wave is something distinct, certainly different from any other wave, but at the same time, not distinct from the entire ocean. Each wave becomes a manifestation of a greater thing, which is the ocean. Distinct, and yet at the same time, paradoxically, not distinct from the ocean. And I think, as I think about vocation, about our calling, about my calling, those things that I've considered to be a calling for myself, I don't know exactly how that voice comes about, but I know the feeling of having this undeniable, inescapable, interior belief that I am being called to do certain things. And then also having other things that I do, whether it's a job or whether it's something in the social realm or whatever, where I feel like I'm really out of my element. This is not me. This is not, doing this is not who I am. And I think that's important. I said earlier that reflection being reflective is important. I think it's incredibly important, especially when we talk about what we do and who we are, because so often we just assume it's okay for me to keep doing things that make me miserable. As I feel myself dying year after year, doing whatever it is that I'm doing, sometimes we think that that's just what it is to be human, to just slowly be killed by the things we do. And I don't believe that. And don't misunderstand. I think there is value in doing even things that feel like a stretch for me, for a time. But I have to make a relationship with them. And let me give you an example. I mean, when you're young and you're first starting out, and maybe you've got a family, maybe you have a kid, you know, you feel this need to be able to make a living, to make money, just to feed your children. And so you do what there is to do. And if there's not something to do that feels like a vocation, like a calling, like oh, wow, that's me, that's who I am, you do something else. You do something else for a time because you care deeply and you love deeply those who for whom you are responsible. And maybe that's your calling. And so that calling of caring for a child, of caring for a loved one, a spouse, even a parent or a friend, that calling may push you into doing things that maybe are not just your great vocation. But I think being aware of that, not just saying, hey, that's just the way it is, I'll work till I'm dead and supply my family with what they need, I think that is a limitation that is at some point becomes no longer good for those you love either, because those you love probably love you and they want you to flourish, not just to exist. Here's where the challenge is, and I think this is where the breaking happens. The breaking as a wave that makes that wonderful sound, that crashing, that music at the beach, and digs out and creates the tide pools and spreads life and scatters it and does all these wonderful things. That breaking, when one wave ends and goes back into the sea. In one sense, that's when what you thought was a vocation, a calling, and maybe it was for a time, falls to pieces. I spoke in the last episode a bit of my deep, deep desire to be a poet and write poetry and even to teach at the university level with poetry. And I told a story about how that was dashed, you know, by the system, by the tenure system, and by a particular dean who didn't see the value in what I was doing. Well, what happens when your vocation, your calling is crushed? Is that the end? Was I only one thing? Am I destined to never be that thing again? Well, I think not. And I think this is the encouragement of the waves on the sea. That I may experience many, many different iterations of self, of who I am at different times, different spaces in my life, different relationships with different individuals in my life, different places of living and being in my life. I may experience different iterations of my vocation, of who I am, and they may painfully crash, but that even that crashing makes a music. It makes a sound. It makes a voice. And it may be calling, if I'm able to listen to that, it may be calling me into something new. It may be pulling me back into the belly of the ocean to take on a new form. And that is encouraging to me. That's encouraging. It says that I'm not just one thing. It says that we are not just one thing, that we are a much larger thing and part of a much larger thing, and that I may have different roles to play at different times. The final metaphor in this poem, one song, measures cresting far out toward the horizon, sounding me into being, humming gently even now in these shallows. Maybe there is this great song that is life. And by life, I don't mean my life. I mean life with a big giant L and all the relational existence and all of this. And I'm called to play a particular role, to sound particular notes at one time. And when that time is done, maybe I'll be called to sound other notes. I think what's important, at least for me, in my thinking about all this, is that, one, I'm listening, because I can't sound any notes that work if I'm not listening too. I've got to be listening. And second of all, that I'm not just satisfying myself to make noise. That I'm constantly trying, like a singer, trying to hit those notes. And it may be a reach for me, but I can sense and feel both the notes I need to hit because I'm listening to the rest of the music. But I can also sense that it will be a stretch, but that I can hit it. And it's that stretch. It's that slight stretch. And sometimes it's a bigger stretch. That's what makes hitting the note so wonderful, so fulfilling, so spot on. Not that it was easy to hit, but that there was a challenge in hitting it. So there's more there. There's a lot more there, I'll come back and revisit that poem at some point. But it's good. You know what's interesting about poetry is you learn something in the writing. You learn something in spilling it out and working with it and drafting it and getting it just right in that moment. You come back later. I mean, this poem was probably maybe 10 years ago, maybe. At least 10 years, actually, probably more like 11 or 12. And it's opened up more for me now. It's different, and there's more there. And I think that's the wonderful thing about reflective work. Whether you create things, do journaling, or write poetry or songs, or whatever it is you do, to go back to later at a later date to reflect on some of those things and see what has changed. See what these things that you put down, that you created, that you did so many years ago, see how they resonate now. See what voice is in them now. And how that voice has shifted and changed. And it gives you a perspective on yourself and where you're at now. So we're going to have one more poem. And as I said, this one is another one that draws on something in the natural environment and as a source of meditation on maybe on existence, on being. This one was written a little bit after, but in the same general vicinity as the previous one that we just talked about, vocation. This poem is called The Stones. The Stones. Any rock slides bound to leave a mark. Boulder fields tell stories of old adjustments made to mountains. You can read them just like you read the rings of trees or ponds. I heard about a boulder field in North Carolina once, where people came with hammers because the rocks would sing when you beat them. I have made adjustments, too, thanks to gravity and late winter ice. But I have yet to hear the song my rocks might sing. I'm not in charge of this shift in my face, only responsible for being brittle enough to come down. I take on a new name with each rock slide, each new face, names as arbitrary as clouds, because I do not do the naming. People project their dreams upon a silhouette. They call me fortress. They call me thunder. They call me old man. In South Dakota once, they jackhammered dead politicians into the sides of mountains, and now faithful pilgrims lay gifts there at the base of the rock slide, buy trinkets to clasp later as they mumble their prayers. I'll not be shaped by jackhammers, even if you promise me gifts and worship. I am the work of another, faults in my granite bright with potential, ice and gravity, wind and water know best what I will be when I am done. So I live not that far from Mount Rushmore. If you've ever been there, you know. If you've ever been to this area, you've probably been there, because that's the thing you go to. And there are mixed feelings about this. And I suppose the feelings that I have and that are expressed maybe in this poem are not so mixed. I also do a lot of hiking in the Black Hills, and there are wonderful, we have the Needles, we have all these natural formations, all these things that just are remarkable. And like clouds, you can look and you can say, what do I see in that? What does that look like? That reminds me of something. Oh, look at that magic. And then what's really interesting is, and I notice this every time I drive home, I live in Spearfish Canyon, I drive down the Canyon Highway and I see between these two peaks that separate, and I see this formation, and it looks like a man's head, and it's right there on the edge of this jutting rock that's right over my house. And I see that, and I feel like I've seen it so many times. I recognize it each time. I say, oh, there he is. There he is. I'm home. And there's like this relationship that develops. Stones, mountains, cliffs, faces of rock, they have personality, they have history. there are these other two giant boulders that sit right in the middle of Spearfish Creek. They're called, most people call them Kissing Rocks. They're two giant, they're like two small cottages. And you when you get up right next to them, you can see the path that they took coming down from the top of that side of the canyon, and how they, on the day that they came down, it must have been just a huge noise and a huge, it must have been earth rattling as they came down, and they came to rest right in the creek, right next to each other, just almost touching, not quite touching. That's why they call them the Kissing Rocks. But you can see that, and you can see the story of them coming down. You see this thing that happened. The trail is there. The storyline is there. And the personality is there. And it's developed as you come back again and again and again, and you pass it on your way to here, to this place, or you pass it the other direction going to that place, and you see it, and you say, oh yeah, there they are. There they are, the Kissing Rocks. There they are. They're there. And there's all of this history there, and there's all of this personality. So, what should shape a rock? What should shape a mountain? What does shape a mountain? Ice, wind, water, weather shape these mountains, brings parts of them down. You know, we have boulder fields where at some point a whole section of the side of the canyon collapsed and came down in a big boulder field, and you can see the insides of the rocks, and you can see how they were pressed together for millennia, and had these little layers inside, and there's all kinds of amazing geological things and stories to be seen as the rocks are opened up, and you see ancient plant life or ancient aquatic life embedded inside these rocks, and you know these stories are there, and then you marvel at the things that are carving them into whatever it is they are, things that suggest different things to you, or that you develop a relationship with. Now contrast that with taking a story about a politician or about a president, a Washington, a Jefferson, a Lincoln, a Roosevelt, and saying, there's a nice big face of rock. Let's take the jackhammers and let's knock out everything until we get the faces of those guys. And then, of course, after that, we have to continually put things in the cracks to prevent the natural erosion, the weather, the wind, the ice, from destroying the face that we've made, because that's not really the face that the mountain wants to have. The mountain wants to have a face that is shaped by water, by ice, by wind, by weather. That's the shape the mountain is moving toward, and yet we have to work to maintain the shape of Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, Roosevelt. I got the order a little wrong. It should be Roosevelt, then Lincoln. And so what does that have to say with me? You know, we have all these people who come here to just... I use the word worship, and they might not use that word, but there is an element of founding father worship that occurs at Mount Rushmore. If you've ever been there, you know it. People get giddy about these guys and their faces on the stone. people buy all kinds of trinkets to remind themselves of these guys on the mountain and the stories that they associate with them. And I don't want to call any of that into question, but what I do want to say is, what do I want for myself? Do I want to be or to become the thing that others project onto me? Who has the right to decide the shape of my face, the shape of my identity, the shape of my being? Who has the right, more so than ice and gravity, wind and water? They know best what I will be when I am done. There is something lovely about allowing oneself to be shaped by one's experiences, and not to disdain that, but to value it. To be shaped by time, to be shaped by scars, injuries, to be shaped by growth in certain ways. To be shaped by adversity, to be shaped by non-adversity, by blessings, by wonderful things that have happened, to be shaped by relationships, to be shaped by the natural things that occur, rather than to either allow others to shape who I am, to project onto me what I should be, or to have such a clear vision of who I should be in my head that I defy everything that occurs. I close myself off to anything other than this goal that I've set, that I will have happen. There's something beautiful about letting go. There's something beautiful about a cliff that stays put. There's something beautiful about a cliff that comes down all at once in a rock slide. There's something beautiful about nature taking its course, about weather carving us, water, ice, wind, sun shaping us. It means that I am part of this bigger thing. Like we said with vocation, I'm part of this bigger thing. I have a shape now that may be changed over time. The Stones. Well, there we have it. Two poems, I think both sort of related. One tapping into the ocean, the other tapping into the mountains. And both giving me lots of thoughts about identity and selfhood and who I am and what shape I take and what is it to be valued in being shaped and reshaped and reshaped again. That is part of being alive. Thank you for joining me for this episode on poetry. This is our second in this series, so we have about 8 more to go, and I'm super excited. I really enjoy digging into these poems that I haven't entered into these poems in a number of years. So this has been really great for me to pick these out and then to share them and talk a little bit about them. You can find all of my music and all of my lyrics at scottsimpsonmusic.com. You can stream all of my music on Spotify or iHeartRadio or Apple Music or iTunes, anywhere else that you like to stream. I will work on making sure that we have maybe at some point this entire collection, the selected poems of Scott Simpson from 1989 to 2009. Try to have that available in its entirety at some point. But in the meantime, you can go to scottsimpsonmusic.podbean.com and go to the page for this particular web episode, and I will post these two poems there, so you'll have the text of these two poems to return to. Thank you so much for joining me, and I value your attention and your time, and I would encourage you to once again turn around, look around you. What is going on around you? What is there that you can reflect on, and do a little bit of thinking, maybe some creation of whatever sort of things that you create, to really reflect on who you are and who you've been and where you might be going. And it's a wonderful thing to be a reflective human being. Stay tuned and be well.